Burns.
I went. You'll see it as soon as it's finished. You'll see it.
But Vice President Biden, you want to respond?
Yeah, I do want to respond. Look, the tax code that made him, put him in a position that he pays less tax than a school teacher makes, on the money a school teacher makes, is because of him he says he's smart because he can take advantage of the tax code. And he does take advantage of the tax code. That's why I'm going to eliminate the Trump tax cuts. And I'm going to eliminate those tax cuts and make sure that we invest in the people who, in fact, need the help. People out there need help.
But why didn't you do it over the last 25 years?
Because you weren't president. Because you weren't president screwing things up.
You were a senator.
You're the worst president America has ever had.
Hey, Joe, let me just tell you, Joe. I've done more in 47 months. I've done more than you've done in 47 years.
Just have 20 seconds, Kate Aronoff, your final response.
Like most of the 1%, Donald Trump lives by a different set of rules. Most working people pay more taxes than Donald Trump has paid in the last 15 years. The Times reporting is very clear, and we need to get him out of office. That's it. I mean, we need a much better tax code, and we need to tax the rich much more than they are now.
Kate Aronoff of The New Republic, thanks so much for being with us. And if you'd like to see the whole debate, 90 minutes of the free-for-all, you can go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Julie Crosby. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
You are listening to KBOO Portland,
where it is 8 a.m. It's Wednesday. It's time for Wednesday Talk Radio with your host, Paul Rowland. So stay tuned.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damn it? Look right now, and you will see we're only here by the skin of our teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your lead.
Yes, indeed. Once again, Buffy St. Marie starts us out, carry it on. That's what we got to keep doing in the face of the madness of the mad president. And I am Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I am sure some of you, many of you perhaps, watched the debate or part of the debate. I confess I couldn't stomach watching the whole thing. I also had to take care of some household business, so there's chunks of it I missed, including the now infamous stand back, stand by comment regarding the Proud Boys, who keep showing up in Portland. Recently had a bit of a flop, but now they're once again emboldened by a president who refuses to denounce white supremacy. So that's what I'd like to talk about. Probably many of you also just heard a full hour talking about the debate on Democracy Now! So your pump is primed, presumably. Pump is primed, presumably. It's alliterative. And perhaps you'd like to talk about it. 503-231-8187. That is the number to call in. And I'm looking for a lively conversation. Obviously, there's many talking points coming out of the debate. The discussion of COVID, which from what I saw, I thought Biden wasn't as strong as he could have been. I might have missed. I know he kind of kept bringing it up throughout. But I think there's a very simple, strong narrative that needs to be continually emphasized. He did say that Trump never had a plan. Again, I could have missed it, but you know the very simple pointing to other countries and how they have dealt with it and how they have succeeded in not having such a complete economic disaster, taking care of the people who need to be taken care of, and not bailing out the corporations in such a utterly stark, difficult economic time. Again, I could have missed some of that. So that's one thing. Obviously, we do want to talk about Trump's complete missed opportunity, which I guess by now is predictable, for denouncing, which even Fox and Friends called him out on. So 503-231-8187, let's talk about it. I don't know, I've been looking up more about the Proud Boys and what they represent. Over the years, I've referred to the sort of the hardcore white supremacist, both ruling class and kind of the shock troops of the people who have sort of felt at sea in this confusing neoliberal capitalist society and have given in to what has been a hallmark of United States culture and politics of always having the African Americans and other people of color to fall back on as the scapegoats and as people to be seen as the inferior and people to be demonized and people sort of to be seen as lower rungs on the ladder so they can so we in a lot of sense I'm certainly part of that. I don't deny that. I've tried to raise my consciousness, as it were, as the best I can, but there's people who are still so caught up in the dynamic of white supremacy that they're willing to form groups like the Proud Boys, who proudly see themselves as carriers of white supremacy and Western chauvinism. So they're kind of like the sort of the canary in the coal mine, or the most obvious carriers of this virulent white supremacy. And Trump seems to be goading them on, and in a very dangerous election time where, you know, he's calling people to basically go to the polls and, you know, possibly scare people off from voting. So there's so much to talk about. 503-231-8187. I really want to hear less of my voice and more of your voices. And we already have a caller on the line, and that's Camilo. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good.
I would like to speak with reference to the issue of white supremacy, a book that is perhaps going to be the seminal book on the subject and how it impacts social life, politics, economics, in fact, everything. And that is called, the name of the book is CASTE, C-A-S-T-E. And its subtitle is The Origins of Our Discontent. It's by Isabel Wilkerson, who wrote The Warmth of Other Suns, about mass migration of blacks from the South to the North in the 20s. Well, this book looks at the caste system in India, in Nazi Germany, and in the United States, and how it operates. And I just wanted to read a small passage that relates to what we witnessed last night. And in this section, she's speaking about her experience with training her dog that seemed not to recognize that she was the alpha. And this is what the dog trainer tells her. "If you are having to raise your voice to get their attention," she said, "a dog will not see you as the leader. You have already lost. A true alpha does not behave like that. and doesn't have to. If a so-called alpha resorts to that, they are signaling that they are not in control at all. And I think a few commentators have already said this about Trump's performance last night. He's clearly revealing that he's frightened and that his bullying behavior is a sign that he's really feeling weak. And, you know, I think we can take heart from that to know that we got them in the corner. And essentially, that's the reason why white supremacists are behaving the way that they are, because they feel like their sanctioned position above everybody is being threatened by the rise of the minorities. That's what I have to say for today.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I what you said about, since there's obviously a deep psychological level to what's going on. We have to always look at that, because, you know, people aren't born white supremacists. They're not born people who are so confused by the situation that they resort to such things. So yeah, I think you can definitely see the Proud Boys as embodying that, the posturing, the, you know, the game playing, the resorting to immediate violence as opposed to actually having serious conversations. They're obviously threatened by the idea of having serious conversations. Trump is obviously constitutionally incapable of having a real conversation, so he resorts to browbeating, to talking over, and that's one reason I couldn't keep watching. It was just so sickening to watch. But yeah,
it makes you crazy.
I know, but we definitely I do always appreciate people who are able to stick with it and be really serious analysts of what's going on, because we need that desperately. So
I just want to repeat that book Cast really explains it thoroughly, and if you're seriously interested in the subject, read this book, Isabel Wilkerson, Cast.
Yeah, no, when that came out, I really like the reframing it in using the term cast, which sort of really puts it in really real terms, that it's the idea of structural systemic racism. Cast really points very, very clearly to that. Yeah. Okay, well, any other thoughts before we let you go?
No, it's just that, this is all discouraging, but there's no other choice for us but to stay strong and do everything that we can to replace this guy so that we can move the corporate Democrats further to the left once we have the opportunity.
Indeed, indeed. Well, always good to hear from you, Camilo.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. 503-231-8187. The lines are open for you to join in. I kind of went to the Proud Boys. I mean, I've been looking at some articles talking about the decline of the West. An article, I Live Through Collapse, America's Already There. Living in Sri Lanka during the end of the Civil War, I saw how life goes on, surrounded by death, by Indi Samarajiva on medium.com. Another article, Is America the Holy Roman Empire of the 21st Century, something like that. That's the kind of thing I thrive on. And just interesting, I'm on their website, Proud Boys Western Chauvinists, the world's greatest fraternal organization. The time for apologies has passed. I am a Western chauvinist and I refuse to apologize for creating the modern world. The West is the best. And as Camilo was saying, they're obviously feeling threatened by the possibility that America, and hence they, who, you know, that's what people do who perhaps don't have their own strong sense of themselves independently of, you know, the nation state, and again see the trends in the modern United States undermining the legacy of, you know, their supposed superiority as being positioned as white people in a white supremacist culture. They see that slipping away, and so they kind of proudly to say that they're the they're Western chauvinists. Where, you know, from my perspective, what has the West brought? As we know, it's brought colonization and slavery to the Western Hemisphere, which had incredibly rich and well developed cultures that there's things one can criticize perhaps about some of the hierarchical civilizations that had developed, and that'd be an interesting conversation, but by and large had adapted well to the ecology over 10 to 30,000 years of existence here, and certainly had adapted better than what Western civilization brought, which is now bringing us to the brink of total ecological collapse. And that's a really difficult pill for a lot of people to swallow. But it looks like we got another caller on the line. Chris, you're on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air now.
Thanks. You can hear me?
Yep.
Oh, great. Well, I'd like to thank you, Paul. I listen to you all the time, and I'd love to call, but I can't for some reason. And I just want you to know that we're out here, and we really appreciate what you're doing. Your show's
well. Thank you
for presenting issues for us, and thank you. Also, I'd like to thank Camilla for that great call. I just looked up the book "Cast: The Origins of Our Discontents" by Wilkinson. It actually has a little Wikipedia page. If you want to go there and look at the summary, it's outstanding. Dehumanization, that's the key to me of how you, that's what she mentions, is the key to how you can degrade a group of people. You know, you just treat them as less than human. It's pretty simple. That's what the Nazis did. That's what we did here to the Native Americans and the blacks. And what was it? He mentioned India, I think she mentions. So, yeah, you set up a caste that you teach people they can treat them horribly, and that's what happens. So as long as you don't treat everyone, you don't have the principle where everybody has dignity, that is going to happen. And it has to be everyone. In every walk of life, in every area of life, you cannot leave anything out, because that gives you the permission to degrade somebody, you see? So, like, say workers, for instance, we still degrade workers in this country, right?
Mm-hmm.
So don't think you can just, like, oh, you know, think you're going to solve racism when you don't solve worker, you don't solve classism or gender discrimination. See, always it's a package. Everything has to be, it's either everyone has dignity or everyone is vulnerable to losing dignity. And to me, when she used the word dehumanization in this write-up on her book, I thought that's the key to everything. You dehumanize, you take away people's dignity, and you just, it becomes a habit. You start doing it to more and more groups. I wanted to also just bring up the debates. I read something your listeners and you might be interested in. Someone was mentioning the Kennedy-Nixon debates, and they mentioned there were no interruptions, zero interruptions in that debate in that 1960. And I looked up, I just Googled number of interruptions in last night's debate. 128 by Trump.
Oh, somebody actually counted
both,
them up.
Both the moderator and Biden. So look at where we've gone. We've come. We've accepted that level of discourse of rude and that's totalitarian discourse when someone can't finish when you won't let someone finish a sentence. That's Orwellian. So we got a president and unfortunately a large segment of our population believes in that level of discourse. It believes in a totalitarian style of discourse that would scare the hell out of George Orwell. So I just thought I'd bring that up.
Okay.
If you have any comments, I'll hang on. I didn't mean to go on so long, but
no, that's fine. That's fine. We have one other caller waiting on the line, but
okay.
We've got plenty of time. The psychology of totalitarianism is, people obviously feeling, haven't fully, I guess, been able in such a vicious exploitative culture, haven't been able to integrate their own in psychological individuality, and perhaps may have been raised by either abusive or dominating parents, or get their role models from abusive and dominating people. The whole culture of violent films and video games and the endless drumbeat of imperial culture as a, violence as a way of solving problems, obviously that all plays into it. And, we know Trump's relationship with his father was something of a abusive one. I thought it was interesting. I read something about the abused relationship. Somebody referred to the way Chris Wallace related to Trump, pleading, sometimes very pleading, was sort of an abused stance that he took. I thought, to his credit, Biden actually didn't play into that. That's one thing that one takeaway that I thought he, by and large, kind of stood up for himself proved that he's, this whole thing about dementia or whatever, to what degree, he's lost faculties or whatever. I thought he demonstrated a coherence and sort of a certain calmness, and also, calling out Trump. So anyway, I thought in some ways, Biden acquitted himself pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I would like to say another thing about Trump and the totalitarian issue. Because I remember Chomsky used to bring up this a lot, Noam Chomsky, that corporations are totalitarian institutions. The CEO is a dictator. And, Trump can, as a CEO, he could interrupt anyone he wanted as many times as he wanted because he lived in a dictatorship, his corporation. His underlings, they had to just shut up and listen. And now he goes to a place where he has to shut up and listen, and he can't stand it. He couldn't handle it. So that's also part of the culture. See, people are trained by their culture, by capitalist culture, to tolerate
totalitarianism
in the economy and in your daily life. So, and then there's the horrible fundamentalist religion that a lot of people believe in, which is also totalitarian. God is a dictator, right? Hey,
yeah,
you
indeed.
Don't worship a dictator. You say a dictator created the universe and can torture you for the rest of existence. How about that for a philosophy? this is serious business here. When you get down to the what's behind the right wing's thinking, it's totalitarianism all the way down.
Yeah, and they're all grouped. All those worst elements are grouped behind Trump, indeed. Well, thank you for your call, Chris. Let's go to our next caller. I just wanted to say real quick, Kathy, hold on just a second. Actually, I kind of lost my thought. Let's just go right to Kathy. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. A great discussion. Another great discussion. Thanks, Paul. This is really important stuff to be thinking about right now, because as so many of us are concerned about, I hate to say the word, but I'm not taking it really seriously yet, and hopefully won't, but civil war is something people are talking about the election itself. And I think, you know, one reason why I don't think we're going to have civil war is that our side is nonviolent. And nonviolence is more powerful than violence. And this is something that is not well understood, which is one thing we're dealing with. We have to really explain ourselves better. Rather than telling these guys what they're doing wrong, we need to talk about what we're doing right. And one of the things, you know, this discussion this morning, you keep saying about totalitarianism and, you know, the pushiness. I managed actually to watch the entire debate. I was proud of myself. I was very happy with Biden. Trump spent most of the debate scowling. I was able to actually watch the expressions as well as listen. And yeah, Biden was impressive. He was presidential. Applause to Biden, you know. But, you know, he set an example of exactly what we want. Someone who stayed calm through most of the discussion. He made good points. He was confidential in making his points. He wasn't simply passive, as some of the problem is, if we're nonviolent, that we tend to be too passive and too deferential. You know, I fall into this myself. I'd rather, you know, back out and turn around and go away, which is a good response in a conflict, than yell and scream, which I could do too, you know. But if the idea...
Hello? Oh, we lost you. You still there? Kathy. Well, if you're still there, hold on. I'll just respond to a few things. You broke up there. The whole issue of nonviolence is a thorny one. I think that might be perhaps a gross overgeneralization when you say our side is nonviolent. I guess it, to me, it might drastically limit what you refer to as our side, because I know there's people who feel very differently on that subject. I know that, you know, my father was involved in the anti-fascist struggle in Italy. He was very young, wasn't involved in the armed side of it, but there certainly was a armed component to the anti-fascist struggle there. I'm not advocating that in our circumstances, but I'm, you know, there's certainly been plenty of anti-colonial, anti-oppression struggles around the world that have used, I guess what you call violent means of opposing overwhelming, oppressive, and violent repression. So I think that's a subject. I think that's one of the actually problems of the, you know, these labels are all very difficult. The left, the progressive, anti-oppression, whatever you want to call the grouping, which is always very somewhat amorphous and somewhat difficult to define. But there's many issues that create conflict within that milieu that I feel never gets fully resolved, and so I think we need to actually talk more about what these things instead of just. I frankly think that kind of sweeps under the rug very important debates and discussions that need to happen. Anyway, are you still there, Kathy?
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No. I absolutely agree that when all other remedies are exhausted, that violence, you know, is totally appropriate. The difference, though, I think, in the progressive is the fact that our, you know, we don't raise our men, for example, to be afraid to cry. We raise our men to have sensitivity and to be in side by side with women to, for example, share household chores without shame, that it's a, this is a not a masculine thing to do. And it, you know, I could go on, but no, I agree. We need to keep violence in the toolbox as a remedy and as part of our stance. However, we also need to explain ourselves. As you were talking, I thought about the Zapatistas when they rebelled in, I think it was 1994, at the starting of NAFTA. For people who don't know, it's a Mexican group down in southern Mexico. And they declared independence from Mexico, I believe it was, because NAFTA was taking out all of the, it's a complex, but the corn imports, imports from Mexico to the United States devastated the Mexican economy under NAFTA.
Well, and, especially the long-lasting, very communal village system, which had been dependent upon a certain kind of small-scale agriculture and was just utterly devastated and led to a large increase in immigration to this country because it destabilized the American rural life. Yeah, I mean Mexican,
right,
rural
the
life.
Mexican, right, yeah, exactly. So anyway, they were rebelling basically against NAFTA, I think. But one of the things that they did was they marched in and took over the government buildings in the state that they were in. I want to say Oaxaca, was that the state? And they used the Zapatistas, but they think the state was Oaxaca, Mexico. But anyway, they used older women as their generals because the Mexican army had such reverence for older women that they knew that this would psychologically disarm them, and in fact it did, because they didn't want to use any more violence than necessary. So they did carry guns, but they used them as little as possible. They didn't want to shoot anybody. But anyway, so they for at least take over the state. I'm not sure where they're. It was wonderful, and they invited the world to join them in their rebellion against the corporate control and you know the resurgence of tribal small scale and communal and egalitarian type living. Go ahead.
Indeed, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned there for sure, and a lot of people did sort of take that and model. There's a very strong solidarity movement with the Zapatistas that had a lot of influence around the world. Well, thank you for your call. We do have another caller. Thank you, Kathy. 503-231-8187. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Roland. We are in about halfway through our membership drive for the fall. And we're looking to raise $80,000 by the end of October. Not sure at what point we're at, but we do appreciate your support, whatever support you can send our way. kboo.fm/donate/give. Or just go to kboo.fm and look at it. You'll see the right away, it says
you know, I'd like to donate, and you can click on that and go straight there. We really appreciate any support financially you can give us at this time. That's what we run on. We run on a lot of volunteers. It's a really a really unique and trying and interesting time at community radio. Well, you know, just about everyone around the country is dealing with this COVID virus, and we are taking it in stride as best we can, and I hope you like what we're doing and are willing to support us by going to kboo.fm. I'd like to also encourage people to spread the word about KBOO on social media amongst your friends, whoever you're in contact with. As I say every week, you can share your favorite programs through social media, through email. Just tell people about them, and they're all basically podcasts. They're all archived at kboo.fm. You can also send us a check to 20 Southeast KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Those are the ways you can support us financially. And again, as I said, we're trying to get 250 new members. Be interesting to know how many we've got. I know everybody's feeling these just remarkably trying times with multiple intersecting crises and multiple intersecting movements of resistance that have developed in the last decade, which is probably also why groups like the Proud Boys and why Trump was able to garner that dwindling base of Americaner support in the face of the Black Lives Matter movement, the No DAPL indigenous resistance, the Me Too movement, the trans LGBT movement, and all those things that are fighting for justice and equality in the United States of America. And we see the backlash. The backlash is very real. It's very dangerous. But the more we stick together, and KBOO prides itself on being one source of people sticking together and sharing good creative ideas. Okay, well, that's my wrap for now on that. Maybe talk a little bit about more at the end of the show. We only have 20 minutes left, so let's go right to Anissa if you're still with us and patiently waiting. Go ahead, you're on the air.
I'm still with you. Yes.
Great.
My wish right now is that there's just about 100 people in the Portland region who could afford to pay $1,000 to KBOO. That's my money wish for you all, for us all. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh. Indeed.
Oh, yeah, okay. So I am very worried about Joe Biden debating with Mr. President for two more times, because anybody with a peaceful, logical, mature mind last night would have a hard time listening to any of it, and I suffered through all of it. That man Joe Biden is going to have a real rough time keeping his thoughts straight with somebody shouting and interrupting him every time he opens his mouth. And of course we all saw that Chris, the moderator, was having to raise his voice and nearly scream at the president to get him to be quiet so that the other person could speak. I'm very worried about the next two debates that Joe Biden has to do, because I would be stuttering if I had that opposition shouting at me while I was trying to speak.
And that's a very strategic move on Trump's part, obviously. We know that.
Well, strategic. The guy can't do anything else. He doesn't know. He's like, seriously, he has a mental problem. He's got a documented mental problem, narcissistic personality disorder in a malignant stage, cannot be diagnosed because the people that have it won't go to a psychologist to get it diagnosed. So we.
I would say that's not. Whatever his mental issues might be, I don't think that's necessarily mutually exclusive with being strategic, because I think he does have enough smarts to know that one of the main things he's got in his arsenal is exactly that sort of bullying behavior.
I agree with you, and I am not aware of how Hitler spoke before he got into absolute power, but I think it was a little bit more mature than our president. I don't know, but it would be a very good thing for everyone who likes to read to get on the internet or grab a book and find out how the German people were behaving in the months before Hitler came to power. Very important for us to understand that, because I believe in its own way history is repeating itself in a way, as to what's going on right now. What do you think?
Well, I think that in times of turmoil, like at various points in time, you can go way back into, the empire culture breeds domineering male figures and sometimes female who are inculcated in that psychology. But generally, male dominating figures in a time of crisis tend to seize control if the society is open to that. And we in this society, in the United States, have sort of somewhat been lulled into thinking that we have these institutions that are in some ways resistance, if not more or less immune, to the kind of totalitarian, authoritarian machinations that seem to be afoot right now. So, our Constitution, our so-called checks and balances is not as foolproof as we might have thought. So, yes, it's a it's something that can that has happened. Certainly, Germany had a shorter period with democracy. Its institutions were perhaps somewhat more fragile. I mean, a democratic mass society is inherently, I think, unstable. Consensus or the people making decisions themselves tends to be much more effective in smaller settings. So it's difficult to begin with, and then you throw in the inequality and disenfranchisement and the ways that of exclusion based on gender and race that were always present in the United States, and you get a very difficult situation. So yes, it's I think the history continually repeats itself, because imperial society lends itself to this kind of thing. As someone I read was saying, this is the chickens, imperial chickens coming home to roost. In a way, we've imposed totalitarian, regime change and stuff on many other countries for a long time, and so maybe, unfortunately, yeah. we are flirting with the possibility of this coming here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We are not well-liked with many countries in this world. But many countries in this world right now have what they're calling a strong man running the show. For instance, in the Philippines, that guy. And in Brazil, that guy who's burning up the Amazon rainforest for cattle and hamburger raising. So my question is, what do people think about... I heard last night that... or read somewhere, maybe in comments, that if Trump is not forced to take his medication, he won't be able to do another debate, and the person who's moderating will have to shout him down to get him to quiet down so that Biden can speak. Again, Biden, I don't know who's coaching him, but I don't know how you coach somebody to put up with what Trump was doing last night.
Well, I just want to caution you about this whole issue of mental health and medications. That's a very fraught subject.
That wasn't my comment. I read that. That's
okay.
What I read.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a little facile. I think that, you know, I don't think the debate's going to be called off because of, you know, presumably we'll have a different moderator. It'll be interesting to see the dynamic. I mean, I think obviously this sets an interesting bar for how it's going to be. But we've got another caller, and we've only got about.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad we got to discuss that. Yeah, I'm anxious to hear the other caller too. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you for calling, Anissa. It's always good to hear new and different voices, including voices, female voices. Looks like we've got Barry on the line. Go ahead, Barry. You're on the air.
Yes. Paul. Hi, Paul. I don't have really a lot to say, but I feel that I do have a choice, and I believe we all have a choice. We can write someone in. I can write in Senator Bernie Sanders and draft him into the White House, because this shouting match that's going on, Democrat, Republican, who am I? I'm American, first of all. So,
My response to that, you made that point one before, but it's a very simple response that Sanders already conceded and is supporting Joe Biden, so it seems counterproductive to try to make him do something that he is actually not inclined to do and would not actually support that effort. So I just don't see any point to sort of beat that horse that already got defeated in the Democratic primary. But thanks for calling in, Barry. And it looks like we've got Annalise on the line. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to say something about last night. And I hope that maybe Joe Biden, next time when this comes up, that he will either ask or warn the moderator that if Trump keeps interrupting him, that he will leave the stage. That was my first impulse last night, and I forced myself also to watch the whole thing. And I couldn't believe it, but of course... So anyway, my first impulse was when Trump started so rudely interrupting him, that I would have said, excuse me, Mr. Wallace, but I'm going to walk off the stage if you don't control this.
Now that's an interesting point. It brings it to a real kind of concrete level of how do you, what sort of, you know, Trump obviously feels constantly that, you know, throughout his career and now as president, that, you know, that there's the consequences for either failing at business or not paying, you know, workers or abusing women or, you know, whatever it is that he doesn't, you know, as a rich white man, privileged white man, he doesn't have those consequences. That's a really good point. What sort of consequences could be set up structurally? I really like that. That's a good point.
Well, he didn't only control Joe Biden. He controlled the moderator, who had to get very loud to ask him to please shut up. Thank you, though.
Well, I'm not sure he controlled. He tried to dominate. I'm not actually sure he actually controlled. Seems to be. Yeah. Go ahead.
That is a better word. But he was surely really trying to intimidate both the moderator and Joe Biden. And so if that had been me, I would have said one time for the moderator to please control Donald Trump, and then I would have walked off the stage, because this was a total embarrassment for the country as a whole. But thank you, Paul. Have a good day.
No, that's a really concise and valid point. I'm really glad you brought that up. Maybe there's other ways, to sort of to put some sort of consequences on Trump's domineering behavior. So I really appreciate that. It looks like we've got another caller, and we've only got about 10 minutes left. 503-231-8187. That's the number
to come in on. We've got Linda on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I really take exception with the caller that said he's going to write in Bernie's name. I mean, if you want to hand the election to the man, write in somebody.
Okay, well, I think we had to cut off that caller who used a word that they can't use on the air. So if anybody else is waiting in the wings, 503-231-8187. It's a general admonition. Maybe we should make this on the air to people to watch their language. There's certain words that can't be used due to FCC regulations. So 503-231-8187. And again, I'd like to urge, implore, encourage, gently request people to support this radio station. If you're a regular listener to talk radio, which we have 5 days a week with different hosts, and all our other great programming, music, public affairs, culture, stuff that is truly unique and mostly locally produced. Not only, we carry Democracy Now!, which is one of our more popular shows. We carry Flashpoints. We carry Alternative Radio. And we're one of the longer running stations to carry a number of those programs other than where they have originated out of. But we also do produce a lot of local programming. So I'll just cut this short, but KBOO.FM, just go there, and you'll immediately be given a prompt as to how to contribute financially. And again, talk us up, please. Let people know about KBOO. You know, we think maybe in our circles that, oh, everybody knows about KBOO. That's not true. Not everybody knows about KBOO. So talk us up. Okay, we've got all of a sudden Joan and Shane. Let's go to Joan. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hello.
I haven't heard the whole conversation, but I just wanted to throw in a quick idea that my wife had about some consequences and Trump, and that is, why not just turn off his microphone, number one. Number two, any time that he interrupts is added time to Biden.
Ah, those are two further good suggestions. I like both of those. Maybe we could encourage people to get in contact with whoever is gonna host the next debate and make those
exactly.
Suggestions. Yeah.
It's so simple. Just turn off his microphone when he's not allowed to talk. And then we can't hear him, but we can see his arms waving around looking like a maniac that he is.
That's wonderful. No, I'm really glad that Annalisa brought up the idea of how to make consequences, because I think that's actually one of the more useful ways that we can actually interact with this circus that passes for a debate. Anything
exactly.
else before that?
I'll just throw in, the other thing you can do is have a middle school teacher be the moderator, and that they would be under control.
I'm not sure that one will get traction, but I like that. I like the spirit of it. Okay, well, thank you for Joan. That was short and sweet. We got Shane up, and again, we only have about 5 minutes left, so 503-231-8187. We might, depending on how this call goes, we might be able to squeeze one more. Shane, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying this whole show. It's wonderful. I appreciate it. And Annalise said my comment, which was to turn off the mic. And to make it fair, make the rules that when one person is speaking, the other person's mic is always turned off.
And an idea. That's a simple solution.
That way no one could complain that it's not fair or that they were cut off. And
So it would work.
Well, let's spread this. You know, there's no telling how you know. I mean, talk to people in other parts of the country. Encourage people again to. I'm not sure which network is going to be hosting the next debate, but I think we should flood them with these are really good concrete ways of dealing, because it, obviously it's untenable. I mean, it puts the moderator in a really difficult, untenable situation. It's obviously disrespectful to everybody who's watching and to the opponent, and it just sets up a horrendous dynamic. And it you know, whether it gives Trump an advantage or not is unclear, but it would be a way of short-circuiting his domineering tendencies. Right on. I appreciate that. Anything else?
No, that's it. That's all I had.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I love these really useful, interesting, concrete suggestions for how to deal with that situation. Well, we've only got a few minutes left. 503-231-8187. Again, KBOO.FM. KB, we are here for you. We are in the pandemic. We are still a bright light of truth telling, and you know, getting real the best we can, the best we know how, you know, from our own voices, the voices of the community, by the community, for the community. KBOO.FM or 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214, for your financial support. And talk us up on social media, on the phone, in person, extent that we meet in person. Okay, we got one more caller, Warren, real quick. Go ahead.
Hey, I've been, my Bluetooth wasn't working very well. So anyway, the past few callers have said something that I was saying way back when Bernie was in the debate before. There was one particular individual during a very important question that was asked of Bernie Sanders, and the guy talked so much and so loud that anything Bernie said, unless you already knew what his position was, you would not be able to have heard any of it. And here's the thing, like I've said, cut the mic, you know, but they're not going to do it, because as far as they're concerned, this is all just a show for them.
Right. But don't say. Let's not take anything for granted. I'm what I'm putting out to the universe, or my small corner that my voice can reach, is that let's make this heard. Let's make these demands. Let's make these our demands for a fair debate. Whether or not they will or not, let's leave that to the fates. But let's at least put it out there and spread the word about it.
You know, the reason I say that, I know it sounds whatever pessimistic, I guess it is, but this is nothing that these moderators and these people that are airing this stuff, they know they can do this, and they don't do it. You know, if Chris was going to sit there and tell the president to please be quiet, they know they can cut the mic.
They haven't heard from a lot of people, and they're concerned about their ratings, et cetera. Yeah, I think maybe it's quixotic. That's possible, but I don't know. I think it's interesting the fact that it came from several women. The ideas. I think that's perhaps telling, and belittle or diminish what you're saying, because I think it's, you know, I'm clear, pessimistic as well about the possibilities of influencing large corporate entities to change their behavior. But let's at least talk it up. Let's put it out there.
Yeah, well, that's great. I think that's important. But then talking about it in this format is a start. I don't know if it will work, but you know, start sending massive amounts of emails to, I don't know, remember what channel it was on, or, you know, Fox News, whichever one or all of them, anyone that are moderating this debate, that say, we don't need the interruption. You need to cut the mics when people are interrupting. If enough people did it, maybe they would listen.
Well, let's put that thought out and see what happens. Well, we are flush out of time, Warren. Thank you for calling, Shane, Joan, Linda, Annalise, Barry, Anisa, Kathy, Chris, Camilo, all of you. It's been a very lively and stimulating discussion this morning, and I am full of gratitude to you and all those who didn't feel they could call in, but listened attentively, and especially to people who go a step further and support this station in whatever way they're able. And thank you to Sonia for board operating this morning. I'm Paul Roland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in